in Liberia, I think that kind of stalled the two extremes. Most of the time we were in Monrovia, and in Monrovia it was very, very busy, and there's always people out, always people around, horns honking all the time. There probably was only maybe like one traffic light, so people were kind of just driving however they wanted. So it was always like kind of busy and a little chaotic, but at the same time there was Liberian music playing and people are setting up their shops and sell their products. So kind of like in New York when you have like everybody setting up and vending and things like that, you know, everybody is just trying to make a living selling or doing whatever it is. You know, one person's cleaning shoes, the other one's making jewelry. So I feel like, you know, despite all the chaos, everybody was kind of on some type of mission. We went to Robertsport in Cape Mount County, which was kind of the opposite. It was like, you know, not a whole lot of people, and just very quiet, but it was also like really just beautiful. The scenery and the beaches, like they're crystal clear, they're clean, because, you know, there's not a whole lot of, you know, you don't have things like the boardwalk and stuff like that we have here. It's just the beach. There's kids, you know, just playing and having fun, surfing, and people, you know, cooking, frying the fish that they just caught from the ocean. So I think that in that same way, you know, people over there, although their environment was a lot different, they're still just, you know, trying to make a living, just like in the city, just different scenery. I hope that it does reach its potential in all its different areas, because it is a really beautiful country, and it's, you know, so many resources, people with a lot of different talents and skills. I feel like, you know, even before the war and everything, Liberia was in a better state, and I feel like, you know, it's possible to become even better than it was. I don't think it's impossible for them to be a developed country, because I feel like they have what they need, or that they can get what they need. It's just a matter of putting in the action and the effort to do it.
Welcome to First Gens. This is a podcast about first-generation Americans and filling in the blanks beside the hyphen. I'm Perrine.
And I'm Skye.
Yes, she is. And this is so bittersweet because this is the final episode of season one.
Why do you sound so happy if you're sad?
It's bittersweet, I said. I don't know. I'm like, I'm happy. Right. I'm happy because we have so much more exciting things to come. Mm. You know, we're going to Liberia. In part one of the season finale, we spoke to our friend Sam, and Sam told us a lot about his transition from Liberia to Sierra Leone to America. And I'm just really excited to bring things full circle and to really show even more parallels between Liberians and Americans, especially the young people.
That's very true. And I just want to acknowledge the fact that, you know, we've gotten a lot of feedback from you guys about Sam's story and really wanting to hear the rest of it. So I'm really glad that we're able to kind of wrap his story up and then also continue on with our story and our journey back to Liberia and to talk to other folks and to see what's going on there on the ground today. Because though Sam's has this really wonderful and interesting story, you know, at a certain point it stops with Liberia. And so we want to pick up and kind of run with that baton.
No, definitely. It's all about bringing things full circle. So when we were hearing about Sam's story, and even when we correlate that to the history of Liberia and trying to bring things to present day, in 2003, women in Liberia had such a huge and pivotal just role in ending the second civil war that took place. And obviously, we had the first female president within Ellen Johnson Sirleaf, who was elected president of Liberia in 2005.
And that's the first female president of all of the continent, of Africa.
Thank you, Skye, for clearing that up, because it's a huge deal. It's a very big deal. So President Sirleaf has been the reigning president of Liberia since 2005. We're in 2017. So there's a lot of, you know, I would say progress that has been made, but a ton more progress that needs to be made within the country. And so we're just so excited and so happy and thankful to be able to go back home and to see what the young people will be doing and to see post-election, because the current election in Liberia is happening this year in October. So we're going to have a new president for the first time in 15 years. And it's just going to be very interesting to see how that plays out, to see who the young people voted for, to see what kinds of promises were made, to see if they're going to be kept, to just see how everything is going to affect these people and to affect this country and to really tell their stories. So we're just happy. I'm happy. That's why I sound happy, because I just want to be able to allow for more people to be informed about Liberia. And I would love for you guys to just see really how Sam's story kind of wraps up and to see where he is today.
Yeah, and there's just so many stories that we don't hear about in the media today. You know, the mainstream media definitely has its own agenda. Right or wrong, I'm not going to get into that or the politics of it. But, you know, there are so many other countries in this world that we don't hear about through American media. And so we feel like it's our responsibility to bring this story to the forefront of American media because of the history of Liberia and America and how intertwined it is. And so we really want to make sure that, you know, we aren't, like, we ourselves are not losing kind of the purview of home, and also to make sure that we're sharing what is happening back in Liberia with folks here in America, because it's a small duty that we need to fulfill as Liberian Americans.
We definitely have, or feel like we have, a duty to fulfill. And, you know, that's been our main goal of this podcast the entire season. And we're so thankful to be able to bring the stories to you guys and to the forefront. And we just hope that Sam's story can give more insight. We hope that the history of Liberia can give even more insight. And we're just happy and excited for what's to come and for you to know where Liberia is today.
This is Sam's Story, Part 2.
Again, remember, we was in Liberia when the war started. We was in Sierra Leone, the other war broke. That's not why we left. We left because my dad had a plan to get us here. But the other war broke in Sierra Leone while we was there. I'm a certified mental health instructor, so I teach mental health first aid to individuals that want to learn how to handle or how to deal with people that are suffering from mental health. So going through that class, it really exposed myself, because as I'm teaching the class, I'm telling my story. I'm telling people I do get depressed, and it's okay. Because I think a lot of times, especially as African-American, period, we are afraid to say we have a mental illness. And one thing I am not afraid to say is that I do have a mental illness, and that's depression. And it's depression from everything, the life that I have lived, the things that I have seen, my experience, period. So I'm not afraid to share that I do have a mental illness, and it is depression. And how do I cope with it? I tend to want to be by myself whenever I feel like I'm being depressed, because I think dealing with it by myself helps me a lot, and it helps me not to burden someone else. But I'm not afraid to tell someone else I am in a depressed mode right now. Like even with my wife, whenever I'm feeling depressed, I let her know early, and I tell her my actions will be because I am depressed. So you have to just bear with me through this duration of time that I'm going through this. But I do want to say, with on the PTS side, when my mom first came to the States, even to this day, whenever she hears gunshots, whenever 4th of July come around, she literally sleeps under the bed. And it's not because she's afraid someone's going to break in her house, but it's because she experienced that. When you sit in your house and you just hear boom, a bomb or someone kicking in your door, that stuff gets stuck with you for the rest of your life. So up to this day, every time my mom hears any type of gunshot, any type of fireworks, I really feel bad for her 4th of July, because she struggled with it. She literally will sleep under the bed. Even though she knows no one's coming to get her, But because she have experienced that, that's something that have stuck with her for the rest of her life. Mental illness, when you're coming from a war-torn country like as Liberia, it's very real. It's very, very real. And people suffer from it. They may not tell you, because my mom didn't tell me she was hiding under the bed till one day I was over there. And it was 4th of July, and they started doing the fireworks. And she just took off and just disappeared. I'm walking around the house looking for her. She's under the bed. I'm like, why are you under the bed? She's like, you don't hear that out there? You don't hear that? You need to get down. I was like, Mom, it is fireworks. It is okay. But then I had to catch myself because she had really experienced that. I was too young to remember, but she really have experienced that. So that mental illness for her is really, really real. And it does bother her up to this day. I think it would be safe to say it's like that for most Liberians who have experienced the war, who were part of that generation when everything was happening. I am almost certain that it's like that for most of them, and especially if they still are in Liberia, because they never know when the next war is going to break out. That's how unstable we are there still up to this day. And it's a shame to say that it's 2017, but we are still unstable in Liberia up to this day. The biggest obstacle my family and I have faced being here in America is not having family around and having that unit. Family is a big deal. I mean, it's a big deal. Growing up in, we're a unit, we're one. Growing up in Ivory Coast, I remember when we moved there, the house we had literally had about 30 people in the house. I'm talking about grown adults, 35, 40, 50-year-old, still living with their parents. So family is very, very, very big for us. And I think that's one of the things, and I was talking to my dad about this, that's one of the things that we struggle with is not being that close-knit family that we were when we was in Liberia. And it's sad because my generation, and I know the generation after me, wouldn't even know who our cousins are. We don't know who our little cousin and brothers and sisters are in Liberia. Because we have been broken. You know, you have family here in America, you have family in London, you have family in Denmark, you have family all over the world. 30 years ago, it wasn't like that. Everybody stayed together. Everybody stayed in the house. But now we are all separated. So I think that's probably the biggest obstacle for my family. And my dad and I talk about that all the time, how important it is. So my dad and I, we have had a lot of rough patches. And I think part of it is we are too much alike. We literally look alike. Like, I am a spitting image of my dad. But remember I said I had a lot of hatred in my heart for my dad when I first came. And when I first met him, because I feel like he left my mom and I in Liberia. But my dad and I have came a long way for a very long time. Even when I was young, in elementary school, going to school, and I'll be bad and I'll come home and I'll tell them, you know, I'm doing this because kids are bullying me. My dad would never go to the school and see what's going on. My dad was one of those worker bees. He was always at work. It wasn't a lot of, at least for me, my sister may agree with me on it, but it wasn't a lot of family time. I can't truthfully say how many times my dad took us to theme parks or my dad did this, my dad did that. We had to go out in the community and find organizations that were willing to do those things for us because my dad was always busy. So for a very, very long time, my dad and I never connected. But as I started getting older, I started realizing that it was important, and even the Bible say it, it was important to have a relationship with your dad. So we worked on our relationship. I stayed with my dad for a long time until I went off to college. And when I first came back from college, I stayed with him again. And I will remember my dad, he would do a lot of petty stuff. Now, part of it is probably because we're exactly alike. And also part of it is probably because I didn't grow up with him. So he didn't, I could truthfully say he probably don't know how to raise kids. And I'm not trying to bash my dad or anything, but he probably didn't know how to raise us because we didn't grow up with him. You know, grew up back home in Liberia. And when we came, he was always busy. So the transition was really hard. But I remember my dad would do everything in his power to not necessarily outshine me, but if I go cut the grass, he'll go cut the grass behind me just to say that I didn't cut the grass. And it got to the point where he kicked me out the house. He put me out of the house and tried to blame my stepmom and said, well, your stepmom the one who wants you out. But it was really him that wanted me out. And then I went back into, for a very long time, for years, I did not talk to my dad. I hated him. I didn't want to be bothered with him and none of that. And that, again, I had that moment where I said, you know what? It's no point in not talking to my dad. I went back to him and said, look, this is the issue. This is what you did wrong to me. This is what I didn't like. Tell me what you didn't like. Let's apologize to each other and squash it. One thing I will say about African family, parents particularly, they're very, very prideful. They will never say sorry, and it's never their fault. So my dad never said sorry to me. It was not his fault that he put me out of his house. And again, I had to convict myself, even though it may not be the best thing to do, but I had to convict myself to say, you know what? Even if he apologized or not, I still need to have a relationship with my dad. And that's what I did. I went to him, I apologized. And now we have a much better relationship than we did growing up. Because I would say growing up, my dad and I wasn't close at all. Like, my dad is not someone who I go to and talk to about my issues. That never happened for me. I had to find other men in the community that was willing to listen and talk to me and mentor me. So we have a better relationship now, but it could have been better. And it never got to that point for my dad and I. Primarily him and I talk, is he just telling me a lot about my family and my history. Because for me, that's important. I need to know where I came from. I need to know who my cousins are and who my aunties and uncles are. So when we talk, most of the time, we're still on the phone for probably an hour or so. He's just throwing out that knowledge to me. Because my dad is a very, very smart man. He's a very, very smart man. Unfortunately, the car he was dealt, because he had to suffer to bring us here, he went into a lot of debt. And a lot of other things happened that he didn't do everything he wanted to do in life. And I will partially say it's probably because he got us here. But as I tell him, that's your job. You are my father. You brought me into this world. So it was your job to get me into a better situation so I can have a better life. So I'm not sorry for that. I'm sorry for the life that you had. But we have a very, very, our relationship is good now. At any time, though, because you know he's prideful and I'm prideful too, at any time we could fall out. But I would say that the last couple of years have really, really been really close.
We can't make season 2 without you. As Perrine and I mentioned in episode 11, we're going to Liberia. So we look forward to telling the stories of young people back home and really hope that you can help us achieve that. To contribute towards our flights, equipment, and the full production of next season's content, you can donate at www.gofundme.com/firstgens. That's the number 1, STGENS. Any amount is appreciated. Now on with the show.
I am very involved with a lot of community organizations. I do it because it's a passion, and I don't do it for attention. I don't do it because I want to be recognized. I actually, I am approached all the time by different media outlets or different organizations that want to spotlight me or things like that, and I literally turn them down because that's not what I do it for. So I mentioned that when I first came to this country, I went out and seek community advocates who will fight or advocate for me and my cousins and my sister. And it was one in particularly in Detroit. It's called a CAS Corridor Community Organization. I remember they will always come and pick us up from the projects. And they would take us to the rec center. They would take us to a building that they had. They just had a bunch of games. The purpose of it was to keep us out of trouble. And a lot of those people who were doing that were just simply volunteers. They weren't even getting paid for it. And growing up and seeing there are truly people like that in the world that really care about people and truly will put their life on the line to make somebody else's life better, I admired that. And I said that's what I was going to do. That's what I was going to be. So I've been in higher education for a little bit over 10 years. I work for Carolina's College of Health Sciences as part of Carolina's healthcare system. And one of the biggest pillars to the tree of life that we have at Carolina's healthcare system is philanthropy work. So out of my check, I donate a lot to a lot of different organizations before I even see it. And I did that on purpose because if I see it, I may want to spend it. I also volunteer a lot for a lot of different organizations. I started a organization called Tailor for Opportunity. What we do with Tailor for Opportunity is we provide business attire to men that are transitioning back into the workforce. So they either came from jail, they got laid off, whatever that situation is. Part of that, what they would do is they will go through our two-week course where we're teaching them very basic soft skills, interviewing, eye contact, handshake, how to apply for the job, how to do your resume, cover letter, things like that. Once they truly complete that two-week course, we provide them with free business attire, so three pieces of suit. My goal is if this thing can grow and it can scale, I would like to take that to Africa. I would like to do a donation drive here in America and take 30,000 pieces of item to Liberia and give it to men that are seriously willing to transition into the workforce. I would like to give them business attire to help them get started. So that's my goal. That's my passion, is giving back. And the Bible said you'll be blessed based on how much you give. I am very, very bad. I haven't been back to Liberia, Sierra Leone, Ivory Coast. I haven't left this country. The most I went was Canada. I haven't left this country at all since I've been here. So my plans next year, though, is to take my wife to Liberia so she can see where I'm from. I can introduce her to some of my family there. So that's the plan. That's what we're working on now. But I have not been back. I think after next year when we go, the plan is to go every 2 years. But I truthfully have not been back to Africa since I've been in America. My hopes for the future of Liberia is that our people come together. My hope is that they recognize that Liberia is a great country and we can be one of the most dominant in the continent. Those corrupt-minded people need to stay away from our country. And the people in Liberia need to vote not based on their feelings, but based on someone who they trust that will really make the change in Liberia. So like Ellen Sharif, our current president, I was really happy when she got in office. Though a lot of Liberians may not like her, that woman has done a whole lot to make that country better. She have worked with different foreign countries to forgive debts that we owe. Countries don't forgive debts that you owe. That's like America asking China to forgive their debt. China not gonna do it. But since Ellen been in office, billions of dollars have been forgiven because of her hard work. Now, all Liberians may not agree with that, and that's okay, but she have done a lot. The point to that is we need people like her to take us into the future. Liberia needs to be exporting our resources. That's the only way that country will grow. Certain part of Liberia don't even have light still and running water. Most part does now, but this is a whole country and you don't have light? That's insane. So my hope for Liberia is that the election year is coming up. I hope that people vote, not based on feeling, but vote based on someone who's going to do the right thing. So put someone that's well-educated, someone that's connected, and someone who can really go out here and fight. Because being a president is a sales job. It's a 24-hour sales job. And we need a great salesperson to propel that country to the future. My goal personally though is to one day retire in Liberia. I know my parents, my aunties, my uncles, they're all going back now, retiring. They're working here and they will go back to Liberia to retire. Well, my granddad passed away. He left over 100 acres for all his kids and his family. So I have a piece of land back there. My dad has a piece of land back there. We want to go back and build hotels or motels or whatever it's called back there now, and put those things there. Not necessarily to charge people a lot of money, but to have an opportunity for people to have somewhere to stay and open small businesses for people too. One of my uncles, he's a businessman in Detroit. He owns several gas stations. He wanted to go back and open a gas station in Liberia. That's gonna be huge for Liberia. So we need people like that who are forward thinkers, people who are truly, they have Liberia in their heart. and they want to go back and help change the country. What makes me proud, or most proud, to be Liberian? Just the fact that I can say I am Liberian. I feel good when I walk into a room and they're typically expecting just a normal, a regular black guy. And I start talking, or I'll tell them I'm from Liberia, and their eyes get big, and now they want to know more. Tell me more. Are you from Liberia? Tell me more. So especially when I get the opportunity to say, yes, Liberia was the first colonized country in Africa. I'm sure people were already living there or living on the continent as a whole, but we was the first organized country in the continent. That is a big deal. And a lot of people, especially people who don't know much about Liberia, everything, we are pretty much like the baby sister of America. Our government structure is the same. The way we operate is the same. We just don't have the resources as America does. But what I'm proud of the most is having that opportunity to say I'm Liberian. It's huge for me. And they've got me places because of that.
This project that you guys are working on, even though our kids, we are very, very grateful to God for blessing us with our kids. So for paving the way for you guys, for everybody, did not have the kind of support you guys had.
Right.
Some of the parents, they didn't know how to blend, how to overcome the challenges that they were having. So we were very blessed to have those challenges, not to overcome them all the way, because we still have challenges as we go every day, but to be blessed with that knowledge that God and that support that God was with us to pave the way for you guys, and for God to instill that love in us, right, to give to our children.
Exactly. So we just thank God, you know, that we were blessed, you know, even though your dad, when he passed, I was still here, and he with God, you know, he helped me to bring you through. To bring you where you all are right now. And I'm just grateful for that. Mm-hmm.
So, just mighty grateful.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so, so much for listening. Not just now, but the entire season one. You guys have no idea what it means to Sky and I to have such loyal and amazing listeners like you. We are going to keep pushing on. We're going to keep trucking to create an awesome season two. And we are just so excited and so ecstatic to go back home to Liberia. But we're just so overwhelmed and thankful for you as a listener. So make sure that you, if you haven't, subscribe to Apple Podcast, because you might get some extra bonus behind the scenes, extra interviews that you didn't hear in season one as we prep and get ready for season two. So make sure you're in the loop. Make sure you're in the know. Subscribe and find us wherever you get your podcast. Make sure to connect and leave comments on social media. Like, we're going to be shooting out Instagram posts and Facebook posts and Twitter posts, and we want for you guys to see that in the off season. We want for you to interact, and we want for you to like stay in the know. If we have contests, hey, like, don't you want to be a winner? Make sure that you connect with us. We're First Gens. That's number one, STGENS. Pretty simple. So make sure you follow us. Also, make sure to get extra content on our website. We'll have tons of things there as well. It's firstgenspodcast.com. First Gens was created by me, Perrine DeShield, but obviously I could not have done it without my amazing, amazing team this entire season. The wonderful, the lovely Sky Wilson, who served as co-host, as well as producer, as well as editor, as well as advisor, and person who held Perrine's sanity together throughout the entire season. I love you, cousin. Also,
Trey, aka Self Pierce, my dope nephew, who helped make sure all of our audio levels were leveled out. He took out humming sounds because I left mics on. He made things more clear and just enhanced the quality of our podcast. Thank you so much, audio engineer Chuck. Auntie loves you. And last but certainly not least, Nick Stubblefield on the beats, on the tracks. Nick is an amazing and ridiculously talented composer out of Brooklyn, New York. And Nick gave us amazing new original content used throughout this entire season. And we could not be more gracious to have him on our team. Shout out to you, Nick. Of course, we'd like to thank Sam Smith for giving us part one and part two of his amazing journey and his Liberian story. Sam, you're a gem. We're so appreciative of you. And Lelai Givens, my little cousin, who gave us a great perspective on Liberia. And of course, our moms, they've been featured on this two-part season finale, the lovely Erlene DeShield. Thanks, Mama. Love you. And my fabulous Auntie Selena Wilson. Yes, we love you too, Auntie Selena. And we're just so thankful for you guys. You're the best moms ever. First Gens is a proud member of Huga, an amazing co-working space based out of Charlotte, North Carolina. Thanks for all of your support. Garrett, you're a gem. Richard, you're amazing. Thanks, guys.